Welcome to the Elijah Rising podcast. Elijah Rising is an organization empowering women recovering from sexual exploitation. This episode is going to help you become more aware about the issue of sex trafficking and inspire you to take action.
Welcome to the Elijah Rising podcast. We are so glad to have you here. We have an incredible guest today. We have Shannon from Out of Darkness, the Anti-Trafficking Department of Frontline Response. And many of you guys have been with us for some of the other podcast episodes that we've had with Jeff from Frontline. We've had him on a few times, but super excited to have you here today, Shannon.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here with you guys.
So we'll dive in. So you are from Atlanta as well. You currently work as the Out of Darkness Emergency Safe Home Manager, and you're also a certified addiction drug counselor. You actually have an amazing testimony of like overcoming personal trauma from your family and exploitation. I'll let you get into that and share as much or as little as you want really later. But you, I've seen you and I've heard about your history of just using your story, using your journey as a survivor and as a believer, right? To empower others to thrive.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming. We're super excited to dive into all that emergency safe homes entail.
Yeah, of course.
So for those of our listeners who maybe haven't heard of an emergency safe home, let's just lay that foundation real quick. So can you tell us what is an emergency safe home and why are they needed on the landscape of anti-trafficking?
Yeah, so an emergency safe home, it is a home that can just provide like holistic individual care. We operate 24 hours a day. And what we do in this space is we want to be able to offer a safe space for women coming out of exploitation to be able to have, again, that safe space for like the crisis stabilization phase. We want her to be able to get some rest. We want her to be able to see a psychiatrist if needed, if she needs to go through detox or just long-term mental health stabilization, we can help facilitate that. But the goal is that safety and stabilization phase before we get her to go to a long-term program like Elijah Rising. So that's the goal. There is not many safe homes in the U.S. And so what we have heard from a lot of long-term programs and just partners in general is that when women are coming just out of their circumstances into their long-term program, they are missing that stabilization phase. And so they come in, they are not stabilized, but it can disrupt the program and all the other residents that are already there. And so we partner with our long-term programs to be able to help them have that stabilization phase as well. And so again, it's that 24-hour safe place for women who want to come to be able to find that stabilization, to be able to start her healing journey.
So you are taking, you're receiving women directly from their moment of crisis.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how do you get referrals? How do women come to you? What does that process look like?
Yeah. So we have a couple different ways are we able to get referrals. We get them from our long-term partners. We have a 24-hour hotline that is ran by an amazing team of volunteers. And we are connected through the national hotline of Georgia. We're able to get referrals that way. We get referrals from FBI, GBI, Homeland Security. And then we also do like outreach. So we have our jail mentorship. We have a mandate program through that. And so that means women can come to us and get and become mandated versus facing prison time. And then we also have our street outreaches, and that's where we go out every week, go to the what you would say hotspots in Atlanta, and we go out, we pray, we talk to the women out there, we've encountered some of the guys out there, and just really show them our consistency, try our best to show the love of Jesus, mm-hmm. and let them know that there is a place to come to when and if they are ready to get out of the lifestyle. And so we have a couple different referral sources.
Yeah. So you're receiving women again, just like, I mean, one moment they're trafficked and the next they're coming into your home, taking mm-hmm. a shower, eating a hot meal, like maybe getting new clothes, like all of those things. Yeah. So what does that process usually look like? I think let me context. Yeah. You know, so many times doing the work of long-term care where a woman is really in our care for maybe a year or mm-hmm. longer, we're diving deep into her trauma. We're diving deep into like addiction, sobriety, care, all of those things. But she's, the long-term homes are not really a place where we go and do outreach as well, mm-hmm. but we can't just bring a woman into our safe home. Yeah. And there are reasons for that. Mm-hmm. Can you touch a little bit on why are those reasons? You know, like, why is it disruptive for a woman just to come into a long-term program? Mm-hmm. And what it's hard for people to understand that.
Yeah, it is really hard for others to understand what the importance of having a safe home is. But also, if you're not in this field, mm-hmm. then you don't get to experience the unstabilization due to mental health diagnoses, due to needing to go through detox, maybe mm-hmm. they're experiencing withdrawal from substance use, just the trauma that they have experienced. They're in survival mode.
Yeah.
So when they come to us, women are full-on in survival mode. What is happening? What am I doing here? Mm-hmm. Like, I know that I want help, but also when they come into our home, they receive such love and care that some of the residents are like, whoa, this is too fake for me. Mm-hmm. Some of the residents are like, I don't understand why you're so mm-hmm. nice to me. And so it is a really good transition to start showing and implementing mm-hmm. first the love of Christ, then that trauma-informed care. We're mm-hmm. going to start trying to empower them to make choices. Mm-hmm. So we are all about trauma-informed care. We want to implement, my little saying that I use is choices within boundaries, mm-hmm. right? And so we want to give mm-hmm. them choices within healthy boundaries. And sometimes they don't know how to make a healthy choice.
Sure.
And when you bring somebody in high crisis mode, not stabilized on any medication, and not only the stabilization phase for medication, but just that survival mode.
Yeah.
And so you have residents who come in and they're on a 10.
Yeah.
And our goal is to try and at least get them down to a 5.
Yeah.
So they can start sleeping better, mm-hmm. so they can start taking care of their bodies better.
Yeah.
A lot of women come in and they get sick, like just physically sick, because their body is their endorphins are trying to come down, and their bodies are trying to catch up with mm-hmm. what's happening. Mm-hmm. They start eating healthy and they have not been doing that for so long. Mm-hmm. They start sleeping in a bed.
Yeah.
They get clean clothes. You know, they start getting trauma counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that they've maybe never have experienced before. And so we are really trying to help handle what's in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So when they go to a long-term program, they do get that long-term inner healing, focus on your trauma. Let's dig deep.
Mm-hmm.
We are more of how can we handle and how can we assess them right now in the moment, mm-hmm. and to be able to address what's taking place currently.
Mm-hmm.
So that may look like currently they just need to be able to feel safe.
Yeah.
Currently they just need to be able to take a hot shower.
Right.
Again, they do get to meet with trauma counselors, but we do not start talking about, well, tell me what your mom did to you. Tell me what your dad did to you. Because if we were to do that and then send them to a long-term program, say we were to have a woman in our home, start processing her trauma with us, and then put her on a flight and send her to Elijah Rising, we have just opened up all of her vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
And her vulnerability just jumped to a 30, you know, and like way above the marker.
Yeah.
And people prey on that, and people can sense that. And so we really want to help that stabilization phase right now.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do right now to get her to feel comfortable, to feel safe, and then be able to get her to a long-term program?
Yeah, I love that. It's when we've been able to work together and like this partnership is so beautiful because we can trust you to send women who are a good fit, who are ready, who are kind of in that mindset of saying, okay, I'm out of slightly out of crisis. Like their brains are able to come down and actually think. I mean, your brain science shows like you can't make long-term decisions when you're in crisis. Yeah. And so we understand that right on the street. We're not pushing them to say, okay, come to our program, right? Yeah. Like they are not capable, and it is unfair to demand that of them.
Absolutely.
So the program that you guys have is such an integral piece. I kind of view it like if you were thinking of stepping stones, you know, from being in the life of exploitation all the way to like healthy, independent living. It is not a one stop. It's not get out of exploitation and like, oh, praise God, like everything's fine. Yep. And I think on the outside, sometimes that's the misconception, you know, inadvertently, right? But there are a multitude of small baby steps and people along the way that need to like help her along the journey, you know? And you guys are that first step. You're like the triage, the ER. You're like, okay, let's get her into a bed and let's assess what is actually going on. Does she need medical detox? Does she need to go to a hospital maybe? Does she, right? All of these things, you guys can just come around and surround her. So beautiful. So Shannon, can you share with our listeners a little bit, what does a typical day look like? I think we have a picture of the person who's coming in and maybe her frame of mind. What do you do on a daily basis? And how does your staff kind of navigate a typical week maybe?
Yeah. So when they first come into the safe home, you've heard their mindset. You've heard where they're at. The first thing that we do is we're going to greet her just with love. And, you know, we'll go through our intake process. Every resident, once they come in, they get what we call a welcome basket. And that has all of her hygiene. It has a Bible. It has a journal. It has a pen. It has her towels, washcloth, everything that she's going to need. We find out, like, does she have clothes? Does she not have clothes? Yeah. What is she coming in with? Does she have shoes? Does she not have shoes? We always give everybody a brand new pair of underwear and a set of pajamas. So once they come in, after that intake, they can go take a shower. It's really the first thing, just like, go take a shower, wash some of this stuff off, and get some rest.
Yeah.
And so that first 24 hours is very vital for them. So we do not expect them to come in, shower, start your day. Yeah. Like, you're not jumping into anything. So depending on where they are at coming in, if they are somebody who's been on substances that does not require inpatient detox, then she... But maybe she needs a couple days of rest. And so there's always a first 24 hours of just rest time. So they come in, they shower, then they get some rest in for the first 24 hours. And then, you know, if they need a couple extra days, totally fine. Like, we are okay with that because that's important, right? Their body is trying to settle and really trying to catch up with what's happening around them. And their mind is trying to settle. And so if they are good to go within the first 20, like after their first 24 hours, then they will get introduced to classes. And so we have, we do what we call block scheduling. And so we can say, ladies, you are in class from 9 to 12. A lot can happen between 9 to 12, right? We offer Bible study starting every morning at about 9:20. You know, we want the women to learn and build a relationship with the Lord on their own, but also we don't want them to feel like we are shoving that down.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to love the Lord. We totally understand. Yeah. And so we offer Bible study. If they do not want to participate, that is okay. We will give them an alternative activity, maybe a self-help book, something like that. Maybe one of our staff members will take her out to the art room, work on a project while we're doing Bible study. So there's choices. But for them, their classes, we focus on trauma in the brain, boundaries, emotions, mm-hmm. introducing coping skills and yeah. allowing them to understand what those coping skills mm-hmm. are. We are really trying to put words to the feelings and their bodies. Yeah. We focus on, we'll do an addiction class throughout the week. Mm-hmm. We do Brene Brown's shame class. Mm-hmm. We love her. And then our trauma counselors will teach a class and just like talk about, you know, not only trauma in the brain, but just how trauma affects the body.
Yeah.
So trauma can affect your body in every way possible. Yeah. And trauma from 3 years old
right.
will still be yeah. affecting you at 37.
Yeah.
So that's our classes. Mm-hmm. Now, classes typically run, you know, we do 9 to 12. We have lunch. Every day at 1 o'clock, they get to take a nap.
Mm.
It is our designated rest time.
That's amazing.
We say you can read a book. Yeah. You can just rest. Mm-hmm. Everybody takes a nap.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
That's okay, right? So we know that they are trying to get in the routine.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not expecting for them to just get it. You yep, know, that yep, that's yep. not a... It, that's an unrealistic expectation for the yeah. women. And then at 2 o'clock, they have a really light class. We do just like a mindfulness game or, you know, some type of self-help mm-hmm. or just something very light.
Yeah.
And then we do what we call personal development. And that is just where they take those coping skills that they have learned mm-hmm. And that or we're introducing coping skills or if they've already met with counselors, they've already like learned what helps them,
mm-hmm.
Or trying to introduce new coping skills. So there's a couple different phases. So from gotcha. Like 3:30 to 4, we're really wanting them to like focus on that coping skill mm-hmm. side. And then, you know, we ask that they just kind of help keep the house tidy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. then the evenings, they do, you know, movies, play games, just kind of really chill.
Yeah.
Throughout the day, we have two case managers who are pulling residents to talk about, like, doing assessments, mm-hmm. talking about their care plan, trying mm-hmm. to figure out what is going to be the next best steps for these residents. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we have long-term programs in Georgia. Mm-hmm. We have long-term programs out of Georgia. We have programs that focus on reunification with family and their children. Maybe they have a DFACS case. I think it's CPS. Everywhere yes, else yeah. but Georgia.
Right.
I'm not sure why. but maybe they have a CPS case. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have probation. Maybe they, you know, maybe they've never experienced any type of program. And so we're really introducing
yeah.
what programs have to offer. And so our case managers are really working and focusing on that side of it. Mm-hmm. I do a substance abuse assessment with all the residents to just see mm-hmm. like where they're at
yeah.
And the kind of the level of care that they need when yeah. it comes to substances.
Mm-hmm.
The trauma counselors are meeting with them. So like as the classes are going consistently, yeah. everybody is like, we'll grab a resident. Hey, yeah. come meet with us. Hey, let's talk about mm-hmm. this. And then you add in maybe they need a psychiatric appointment.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to go see an OB.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to get blood work done. And so mm-hmm. it is, we plan the day, but it can be changed in minutes.
Sure.
So there is a lot... There's a lot of different things that take place. And so we do have those consistent staff members that are with the residents 7 to 3, you know, through the end of the day. They are really focusing on those classes while other staff members, you have case managers, counselors, yeah. myself, pulling the residents out and talking and like, let's have a meeting and let's talk about different things so we can try and figure out like the best steps for them.
Yeah, that's a lot. You're covering a lot. You're talking about addiction, education, familial reconciliation, legal restitution. I mean, there's so much.
Mm-hmm.
While you're also, I hear this, that you're, I want to phrase this right. You are making sure that their attentions are focused, mm-hmm. their energies are focused, because I feel like I've heard this before, but just, you know, boredom is the enemy of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're just sitting around thinking about their pimp, thinking about, right? Like you don't want those things to be stirred up. So you have a lot going on. We will talk after the break a little bit about what does the staff look like? And what kind of quality of staff and number of staff do you need to run this? Because you've mentioned a couple times that you're 24/7. So it's incredible.
Yes.
So we'll dive a little bit deeper. We'll take a break for just a moment. Come back with us and you will not want to miss the rest of this interview.
Hey, thank you for listening to the Elijah Rising podcast. If this episode has impacted you in any way, let us know. Go on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, or go to our website and send us a message. Let us know how these episodes have impacted you. And we provide this podcast and our services of doing outreach into the community and bringing awareness to human trafficking and 24/7 housing. We provide all of this free of charge. And we're only able to do that because people make donations and people support and get behind this work. And so if you want to be a part of that, you can go to ElijahRising.org/donate. And giving $10 or $20 a month goes a really long way. And I would encourage you to take that step and join us in the work to end sex trafficking.
Welcome back to the Elijah Rising podcast, where we have Shannon with Frontline Response. So Shannon, we were just talking about the incredible work that you do. Can you share a little bit with our listeners about, you know, how many staff do you need to do this? Because you're covering 24/7. I mean, you're covering serious mental illness. You're covering intense addiction recovery. You have a lot of variable factors going on, right? Not to mention just a lot of women in a house, right? Can you share with us a little bit about the quality of staff that you're looking for? What type of people and maybe how many, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so the number of staff that you need is really based on the number of women that you are going to care for in the home. Mm-hmm. And so Frontline's stance is really, we want to have that 2-to-1, 3-to-1 ratio. Mm. So 2 residents per 1 staff, 3 residents per 1 staff. It just kind of depends.
Sure.
We operate our home with, again, 24 hours. Yeah. 24-hour staffed, mm-hmm. but we at least right now with having 6 residents in the home, we have at least 2 staff members at all times.
Yeah.
That way there's accountability. Mm-hmm. If something was to happen, you know, you mm-hmm. have support, you know, crisis may be breaking out. Yeah. Maybe somebody needs to go to the hospital. If you have 1 staff member, right. somebody can't take that one to the hospital and who's going to stay back with the women. We are at like that 6-resident ratio mm-hmm. right now. The goal is to move up. Our home can currently house 12 women at a time. Okay. But we are in the process of moving up to 10. Mm-hmm. But also that considers a lot of staff members, yeah. right? So we have 2 staff members who oversee the classes, and that's mm-hmm. a part of the therapeutic team. Mm-hmm. So we have 2 staff members that are in classes consistently for support. Mm-hmm. If they, you know, while one's teaching, one can be reading the room, paying mm-hmm. attention to how what they're talking about could be affecting somebody yeah. else. If they need to step out, they can. If they need to pull a resident to say, hey, I see this is affecting you. Yeah. Do you want to talk about anything? We have 2 case managers. And so those case managers are splitting the caseload.
Sure.
You know, when you are in that 24-hour care, crisis, stabilization, trying to really figure out those emergency needs, you really need to be able to separate and have those have case managers to not only be able to bounce ideas off of each other, but also to be able to have a breather themselves.
Sure.
And we have like part-time trauma counselors. So we have 2. They split caseloads as well. Mm-hmm. Then we have an operations. And operations really runs the like logistics of the house. Mm-hmm. So food and grocery shopping and doing, you know, just the maintenance of the home, being able to take care of, you know, if a toilet breaks, who's going to get on the phone and handle all of that. And so we are very grateful for our operations coordinator. And that was a huge vital role that we really didn't. It's a little removed from the women, but still in the home.
Yeah.
But we didn't realize like how important this role was until we had it in the safe home, because we're all a bunch of women, right?
Yep,
and so trying to navigate the emergency crisis we have happening, trying to navigate classes, case management, this was just a missing piece for us. And so we were very grateful they were able to implement that that position. And then you have our nights and weekends, and where there may not be that many appointments. There may not be that many, like interviews and things taking place. Mm-hmm. The nights and weekends when there's a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
Thoughts start happening.
Yes.
We have learned that, and what we've experienced is the women will, as it starts getting dark, they start getting very antsy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure if this is like a proven fact, but what we've talked about is just the fact that a lot of the women were out on the streets, walking, dancing, whatever they may have been doing in hotels throughout the night, right? It happens during the day, but it's so busy
at night.
Yeah. And so they are busy at night. But we are trying to flip that, and we're trying to calm down and really set the tone and set the atmosphere of, like, let's watch a movie together.
Yeah.
You know, we sit and have dinner together as a family. That brings stuff up as well. There's a lot of triggers and a lot of exposure that is taking place within this home that the women don't realize is happening. And sometimes we don't realize it's happening. And so having those nights and weekends staff members, they have to be on guard. Mm-hmm. They have to be able to pay attention to what is specifically happening.
Yeah.
They have to be able to recognize that maybe a family meal is just a little more triggering for this resident.
Right.
Maybe they watch a movie that, you know, they talk about a child and maybe somebody lost a child, you know, just different things that may take place. And so it takes a village.
Yeah.
Literally takes a village to run this home.
Yeah.
You know, and before we started our increase in our number of residents, which we want to be able to serve more women, which is why we really want to be able to have more homes in different states. But before we started taking that increase, we had about 10 staff members, you know, in this department. But now with the increase, we are working on about 22 staff members.
Okay.
Now, a couple of those are not in the house full time. And I'm in the home 3 days a week, you know, so we're not full-time in the safe home, but, you know, we're there for support, we're there for consistency, you know, we have 24 hours of on-call, and so that, you know, that takes a lot as well. We're helping to support crisis in the middle of the night, and so it does take a lot of staff members to operate this home. Along the lines of, like, quality and, like, education and what they can bring to the team, different roles require different educations, different backgrounds. We have found that having a social work degree is important. Maybe not every role requires it, but the experience. So to me, education and experience go hand in hand. I didn't get a lot of it, of my education until after I started working in the safe home, but the experience that I had was able, I was able to do my job and do it well. So we really look on, like, what education someone has, what experience do they have? Have they worked in trauma-informed care field before? Have they worked in anti-trafficking organizations or just this field? Have they volunteered? What have you been exposed to? It is a huge shock of just being a case manager at a maybe just a regular crisis center or where you see a client 1 hour a day, then you may not see them at all versus see them out all again versus having, you know, full-time case managers in the safe home 40 hours a week. Literally, the residents can knock on their door and be like, hey,
I need this.
Yes,
totally.
And so a lot of balance. And, you know, we have to put a lot of balance in place. You know, but we also have to remember the residents may not know and understand those boundaries. And they are, again, crisis mode. I need to get this. I need to do this. I need to work on this. I need to. There's a lot of things that they can bring into play. And so somebody who has a heart for the organization, has a heart for the mission, has a heart for, first and foremost, the Lord. And really wants to see the freedom for these women. I always say that this working in this field is a true calling, because you have the way. It's a lot of exposure to trauma. It's a lot of exposure to just for us. It can raise anxiety and for fear, and you know, if you're not if you don't understand what you're getting yourself into, then it can really be setting that staff member up for failure. And so we really want to focus, we focus on a lot of education as well. So if somebody comes in and they have maybe some or just little of experience in the anti-trafficking field, then we will really focus on that. But maybe they come in and they've done social work or they have a degree in social work, you know, so it just kind of really depends. But trauma-informed care is so important. I know now trauma-informed care is really blowing up, but it wasn't, you know, like anti-trafficking organizations and just this field is blowing up as well. But also several years back, we would talk about trauma-informed care and it was not like, it was kind of like foreign. And so that's really been powerful to see how much that's growing and just really wanting to implement that in the home.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, there's, it's so complex. We really have a very similar model. And I want to go back and touch on, just clarify something, because you said a 3-to-1 ratio. And so that would be two or three clients to a staff member. But that's in the moment. You need really, you said 23 staff for, let's say, 10 to 12 residents. So it's a little different because you're having to cover overnight and weekend. And that's something I think people don't think about when you say, well, we have 23 staff and we have 10 residents. They go, what? Like, I'm like, okay, hang on.
Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about what that means because not only are you dealing with severe addiction, you're dealing with severe mental illness. And we could, that could be a whole nother podcast. How do you prepare, you know, non-clinicians for that role, right? They are with these individuals again, maybe 10-hour shifts or 12-hour shifts. That's a long time. So, you know, severe mental illness, you're talking about people who have come right out of crisis. Like without all those other, they might be malnourished. They might have been physically abused or beaten or have injuries. There's so many things, right? So you're dealing with a very severe cases of need, neglect, abandonment, abuse, all of these things, not to mention the emotional effects and the spiritual effects that are coming through your doors. So I love that you said that you have two staff members, period, like minimum, no matter what, at all times. And that's something that we are working towards too, because you're right. We literally had this meeting the other day. We're like, nights and weekends, y'all, we need more support. Because the people, I don't know if you find this, but we have found this, that typically, kind of broad brush here, but typically the individuals that we get to hire who are attracted to this work are younger females, typically single, you know, maybe fresh out of college, sometimes not, but you know, with that ministry mindset. And so it can be a lot, right? You're like, okay, I'm 22. Maybe this woman is 37 and she's bigger than you and louder than you, has more experience, life experience than you. And so you really need people who have this kind of chutzpah, be like gumption, if you will, to, or you need to pair like a stronger staff member with maybe a quote unquote weaker one or more, more subdued, you know? And so that's such a dance and like finding people, it is such a challenge to find people to do this work. So I just put this out for all the listeners, both for your organization, for ours.
Yes, please.
We need the workers, you know, and staff members, but also volunteers. I imagine you guys use volunteers pretty heavily to come in and just even if you have staff there present, to give them a little bit of a break and a breather.
Absolutely.
How do you engage volunteers in this work?
So we have a couple different teams that our volunteers can volunteer on. So we are rescue teams. We have volunteers who do the rescue teams. We have volunteers who help oversee the hotline and answer the phones 24 hours a day.
Wow.
We have volunteers who get to go in and do mentorship in the jails. Volunteers will help with street outreach. And then we have volunteers who will come into the safe home. Maybe they'll do an art class. Maybe they'll lead a Bible study. Maybe they'll cook a meal with the women. We have volunteers who will, they'll say, well, hey, I want to help out at the safe home, but maybe not direct care. Sure. So we'll have volunteers who will like to come and organize and like clean out our clothing closet.
And that's so great.
Amazing. <Thank you. laughs> And so we're always looking for volunteers to be able to assist the women and also to be able to assist staff. So we have volunteers who will cover, you know, because we operate 24 hours a day, and we need staff 24 hours a day. There's not ever a time that we can just pull staff members out of the house, but we also still need staff meetings. We still need to connect as a team. We still need education as a team. And so we have volunteers. We rely heavily on our volunteers about covering the safe home while we have these meetings. They're very important for us to connect. You know, Frontline has headquarters and then our safe home is separated from that. So we need time to be able to go to Frontline, to be able to connect with those, the other departments that we have, to be able to connect with leadership over there. So we need those volunteers for sure. And the women really love having the volunteers come in. It's it's a good experience. They say, oh, well, you're here because you want to be here. And they, we have different volunteers who have, you know, just different, what is that word I'm thinking of? Just different, not only experiences, but just skills they can bring in. And so that's, they are so important for us.
That's awesome. I love that you can lean on them, you know? So let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about the clientele that we're seeing, that we're serving. Have you noticed any kind of challenges, new challenges or kind of trends that maybe come to the surface for you? I mean, I know there's been changes like in drug culture and just the severity of that. And I mean, how do these, I'm giving you a very broad question, right?
It's fine.
Like, but anything different or new, or maybe it's not different or new, maybe it's just something like, hey, here's a trend that maybe most people don't realize that you're seeing come through the safe home.
Yes. So just recently, I know everybody brings up COVID, but when COVID hit, everybody knows the world shut down. What we started seeing in that time was higher psychosis. Women would come in and they would stay in these manic states, and it was so hard to get them out of them that they would be fluctuating. The mental health jumped really high for us during COVID. And then after the fact, you know, when COVID's died down and we're really trying to get the world back into normal, the mental health did not go back down. We had a training. We do like mental health first aid with all of our staff. And this was like October 2020. And I asked the facilitator, I said, why are we seeing this increase in higher mental health? Just the women are not able to get stabilized. Like, what is happening? And she said that the groups, the, you know, the support groups, the mentors, hospitals started taking, like, stopped really taking patients to the fact of, like, you can't just come in and sit. You can't just, stop seeing face-to-face. Things went to virtual. And for somebody who is experiencing the higher level care of trauma, the higher level of care of mental health, you know, then you throw in the substances, and then the drugs itself have changed drastically. They have this new tranquilizer drug out that it's mixed with fentanyl and a horse tranquilizer.
Oh my gosh.
But if somebody does it, the naloxone, Narcan does not, doesn't work on them. And so people are dying from that. You know, the opioid epidemic skyrocketed during COVID as well. And it's like, sometimes, like, since we have went way high, you know, through COVID, everything has jumped. Nobody was seeing anybody. You had no NAs, no AAs, CRs. You had no psychiatric groups. You didn't have anything. The world genuinely shut down. But, I mean, for one, we did not. We were able to continue to work. But there were so many places, so many women, so many men who did not get the help that they were receiving beforehand. And so that is something that I feel like in this field, we haven't fully came back from.
Sure.
psychosis is huge. You know, schizophrenia is huge in this, and just working in this field in general. And then you throw in the substances on top of that. Another thing that we've really been noticing over this past year, I think it's like been there in general, but what's really been happening for us down in Georgia is maybe we see somebody who is, we've had residents swallow screws, and we take her to a hospital and they say, oh, it's an impulse decision. She does not need to be admitted. And I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean she doesn't need to be admitted? I'm very confused. We work with one of the hospitals and one of the doctors, and I just asked him, I said, why are hospitals denying residents? We've had a resident who has told us she had an active plan. We took her to three different hospitals, three different places, and they would release her within the hour.
An active plan for suicide.
An active plan for suicide. Yes, sorry, let me clarify that. An active plan for suicide. And a doctor had told me that, what about, a doctor had told me that they were really trying to keep it to where they did not admit these patients. And I'm like, they need it. Our goal is to bring in, we're not trying to kick them out of our program. We're not trying to release, like none of that. We're not dismissing. No, we are trying to get them that 5 to 7 days of stabilization. You know, and I will also say we've already had them see our psychiatrist who is virtual. So you put that into play. But they've already seen our psychiatrist. They've already started medication, but maybe they just need that inpatient, that direct care, that let's play around with these medications. We have learned, you know, so much education behind the chemical imbalance when you play into trauma and the chemical imbalance that it brings to your body. And so where we're trying to run a safe home, you have right now 6 women who are all up and down, going through different backgrounds, different mental health diagnoses, different substances. But we're trying to get them to get stabilized on medications. Sometimes they just need a little more inpatient direct care. They need, you know, nurses and doctors to facilitate and oversee them. We are struggling with finding those facilities that will want to do that. And so we are saying, hey, like 5 to 7 days, like let's get her stabilized. Let's play around with the medication. Let's get her that right dosage, that right mixture of medications to be able to help her get through. Because if they are not in that place of stabilization, if they're really trying to focus on staying out of psychosis or falling in and out of psychosis or falling in and out of suicidal ideation or active suicide, you know, we are trying to, they can't focus on anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have to focus on that stabilization. Right. And so we say to these doctors, hold her, inpatient her 5 to 7 days, and then we will take her back. We will bring her back to our home. Like, we don't want her released to the streets. We don't want her to have to go back. We will bring her back to our home. And then we are able to really assess. We are able to work with her to find that long-term care program. And also, we want to collaborate with our partners and to be able to set them up for success.
Absolutely.
So if we were to send a resident to you guys who was completely unstable, it was kind of like, well, what's the point of her coming to our home? Like, that's our job. That's our goal. We want to help that safety and stabilization to be able to set her up for her best future and also set our partners up for that. And so mental health, substances, it has skyrocketed. It has, I feel like it's just like a shift in what we are seeing. And I absolutely believe that the new drugs that continue to come out all the time, it that does nobody any good with mental health diagnoses. You know, so we're trying to keep up with the times. We're trying to keep up with, you know, just this new world. We're trying to keep up with everything that is taking place, new diagnoses, new medications, new substances, while also still trying to maintain this home. And if we're not educated on what's taking place out in the world, you know, how are we able to care for the women best? So we're, I am always looking into education and always looking into, okay, what's new? Where are we at? I rely on our partners. If you've heard something that's new,
share information.
Share that information. Absolutely. You know, working together, we have to do that in this field.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that that's your y'all's heart. I mean, you guys are just very collaborative, and I've seen it not just with our organization, but across the board, across the nation, mm-hmm. and just coming, I mean, everyone speaks so highly of you. So, you know, of the organization. Yeah. You know, I think this is such a good picture for those who are listening. We have painted a little bit of a dire picture. Yeah. I think there's a sobriety that, yes. you know, I hear a lot, but I do hear often, you know, when we do an awareness presentation or we go to a church, and it is so moving. I mean, this issue is so heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching. Like, we want, as believers, to step into the gap, to step into the fray and say, like, I want to participate in the solution. Mm-hmm. But I also caution people, number one, don't start a nonprofit. You don't need to do that. Like, there's plenty of them, number one. Yes. But number two, like, okay, you say you want to start a safe home. Let's actually dive into what does that look like? Spend some time with the experts. And, right. and I hold that word very loosely. Like, right. I don't consider us an expert at all. But just, you know, spend time with the people who are doing it or have done it. You guys have done it for over a decade. Mm-hmm. And so there's a level of expertise, of wisdom, of like, hard-won battles that they can learn from. And so I hope that some of this information actually doesn't scare people away,
Absolutely.
But actually shows them, hey, you know, you and many of the other, you know, the Jeff who started Out of Darkness, like, you didn't come in with like, oh, I'm a clinician right. and I'm so equipped and oh my God, you know, it was like a calling. It was first a calling right. and then the Lord equipped you. Mm-hmm. And so can you share with us a little bit about maybe what are some victories, maybe are some testimonies that you've seen? Because I know it's not all, it is hard work, period. Mm-hmm. And even in the days when you do get a testimony, it's still hard. But those moments are like the ahas, mm-hmm. you know, like that joy that sparks in your spirit. It says, okay, I can keep going, you know. Would you mind sharing with our listeners some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, being in this crisis stabilization phase, short period of time, mm-hmm. we have a short period of time to build relationships, to build rapport, to build that trust with these women. And so we have also found that where we continue to build and where we mm-hmm. continue to, you know, where women will come and go to our long-term programs and say, oh, I really love Out of Darkness. I love the care that I receive. Yeah. We have a duty to follow up. So something that I really love to do and that I don't get an opportunity to do as much, mm-hmm. but is to just stay connected mm-hmm. with their residents as they go to their long-term program. Yeah. And so we offer a mentorship that way, mm-hmm. Not only with staff, but with volunteers. Mm-hmm. But some of the things that we have gotten to see just over the last year, we have got to witness God heal a resident's heart. It was just a beautiful testimony. Mm-hmm. We have been able to experience residents graduating mm-hmm. Their long-term program. Mm-hmm. We have a resident who will be graduating her program in a couple weeks, actually. But when she was with us, she did not even know where her kids were at. She didn't know where they were at. She didn't know if she would ever get to see them again. Mm-hmm. She just didn't know.
Yeah.
Now she gets to see them on weekends. She has that restoration. She's been able to build and to grow that, you know, mm-hmm. and working towards full reunification with her children. We've had, I think that's one of the biggest blessings. Mm-hmm. I got to take a resident to visit her daughter for the first time in years.
Oh my gosh.
And it, I get teary-eyed. The vision that I got to see physically in front of me, but also what I entailed it as, was like, I got to see the daughter run into her mom's arms, a grown daughter. Okay. We're not even talking about a kid. We're talking about a grown daughter run into her mom's arms. And it was just like, oh my goodness. Thank you, Jesus. But then the Lord gave me a vision of like, that's how he wants all of his children to mm-hmm. run into his arms. And I was like, okay. And I'm just crying. but it was a beautiful testimony. Yeah. And it's like, sometimes we don't always get to see those, but it is the seed that we get to plant while these women are in our home and to where they want to continue to stay in touch with us. We've seen women get completely healed, mm-hmm. you know, mental health diagnoses. Wow. We've seen women get wow. cars, yeah. great jobs. We've seen women want to go back and get education and yeah. Really be in a place of, I want to better my career. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not always easy when yeah. they start. It's yeah. it's trial, it's yeah. error, it's how do we do this? What am I doing from here? But the victories are absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And sometimes we may not get to talk to them for 6 months to a year, but right. then they'll call and they'll right. say, I've done X, Y, and Z. And it's like,
proud.
Thank
so proud.
You.
Yeah.
Yes, it is amazing. And then we have women who will go through our program, go to a long-term program, and then they want to come back. And they want to volunteer. They want to give their wow. testimony, and they want to say, "You awesome. Can do this."
Absolutely.
So there are so many victories, and all the trouble, all the hard work, yeah. all the tears, mm-hmm. and just the sadness that takes place on the staff's part. It is all worth it because mm-hmm. where we have seen is. The seed, the hope. We mm-hmm. can say, you are worthy, you are deserving, you are beautiful, you are all of these amazing things. And we start helping change that yeah. mindset and that pattern. Yeah. And we have to continue to show that. We yes. have to walk that yeah. out. And so there are absolutely just beautiful victories that we've been able to get to witness.
Absolutely.
And that's what helps us keep
sure.
this going.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to, if mm-hmm. you only see, like you said, if you only see the trauma, if you only see the hard stuff, then yeah. nobody's really going to want to stay in this
yeah,
field.
That's right.
They're just not
There's
going
just
to.
There's so many of them. Yeah.
Right. But when you get to experience the victories, when you get to see the graduations, when you get to see the reunification
yes.
with children, when yes. you get to see the women that come in multiple times mm-hmm. and then it finally clicks, mm-hmm. they finally get it and they're like, no, yeah. I deserve this. And I'm like, thank you.
Finally.
Like, thank you, Jesus.
Yes.
And it's, you know, we owe it all to the Lord just to be able to get to experience the victories that he brings to these women.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. And I know you have so, so many that are like personal and, mm-hmm. you know, little moments of, I mean, I remember the first time a resident heard from a man and he apologized to her. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, for something completely different than abuse, but
right.
she was like, that's the first time anyone's ever apologized to me. A man apologized to me. And those are the moments that you yep. go, whoa, like, whoa, there are so many micro moments that make up the macro, you know, moments, the vision that really is the life transforming power. Mm-hmm. But it's the gospel.
It is.
It's like we are living out the gospel or attempting to live out the gospel yeah. in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
And so, speaking of testimonies, we'll end on your testimony, which okay. is so incredible. And you can share as little or as much as you want, but you not only have worked for Out of Darkness, mm-hmm. but you were a resident in their program. Would you
I
be
was.
Willing to share any of that with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a lot of family trauma growing up. Both parents in and out of addiction. Mm-hmm. My safe place was my grandma's.
Yes.
Always love my grandma. Mm-hmm. She's the sweetest. But had some abuse mm-hmm. when I was four mm-hmm. by a family member. And what I took away from that is, this is all I'm ever going to be good for. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's going to protect me. Nobody's yeah. going to love me. I'm just good for men's use.
Yeah.
As I continued to try and just, I never told anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Shoved it.
Yeah.
We're not going to tell
sure.
anybody. This never happened.
Yeah.
Well, as we know, the trauma continues to affect the body.
Yeah.
And then I become in survival mode. Well, mm-hmm. how do I handle this? How mm-hmm. do I overcome this? I didn't know any of that stuff at the time.
Sure.
You know, I'm young. My parents in and out of they were always in my life, but they were in and out of doing their own things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My grandma did her best. She was a mm-hmm. nurse. She worked 12 and 15 hour shifts. And so she was mm-hmm. trying her best to raise me. And, you know, later on took in my younger cousin, was raising us wow. both. Like she is really the glue of our family.
Mm-hmm.
And, she did what she needed to do to take care of us, but there was the lack of the connection, the lack of, you know, let me show you how much I love you.
Nurturing,
yeah. Just the play. Let's sit down. Let's do these things. She always provided. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, I learned that there's more than just providing.
Yeah.
So I didn't have that in my life. I wanted my mom's attention.
Sure.
And, you know, every kid does,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
I just wanted my mom's attention. My dad was really in and out of the picture, mm-hmm. doing his own thing. And I made myself sick. Mm. And so, because in my mind, when you make yourself sick, you get the attention you need, right? Mm. Like, I can't go to the hospital at 9 years old by myself.
Yeah.
Like, I need somebody to take me. My mom couldn't take me because she was, or my grandma couldn't, sorry, my grandma couldn't take me because she was working. So it was my mom. Like, my mom had to take me. At nine, the doctors started doing all these testing, started trying to figure out what was going on. Couldn't really figure it out. Mm. But then they introduced me to pain pills. Mm. And so at 9 years old, my mom was already on her own pain pills. And so at nine, this became an addiction. Mm. I started taking pain pills. In my mind, it's okay. They were prescribed. I didn't even know what an addiction was.
Right.
You know, I was just taking the medication I was supposed to.
Yeah.
Then it quickly led one thing to another. Started smoking marijuana. Just my mom became my friend. Mm. It wasn't really like a mother-daughter relationship. She was not that authority in my life that I needed. And it wasn't, no, you can't do this.
Right.
It was more of like, okay, we can do it together. Mm. At 13, I met my son's father. He was 21.
Mm.
And when I met him, it was through my mom. There was, you know, he brought drugs from her. She brought drugs from him. So things like that. And I fell in love with this man. Mm-hmm. You know, he started caring for me. Mm-hmm. We were together for a really long time. And, you know, there was some physical abuse that took place, some verbal abuse. Mm-hmm. The addiction got worse.
Yeah.
We started, you know, moved from pain pills to heroin to meth to this to that. So all of that played into just my trauma. I got pregnant at 16 and had my son at 17. And I thought, he's going to save me.
Mm.
My son's going to save me. This baby's going to save me.
Sure.
Well, he did not. You know, only the Lord can save. But in this moment, I really thought my son could. But what happened was I continued to be in my addiction, dropped out of school, wasn't really taking care of myself, really trying to be with this man at this point, you know, selling drugs, doing drugs, just trying to survive, really. I ended up, unfortunately, doing the same thing that my mom did to me, kind of left my son, you know, on with my grandma. And right before my 21st birthday, this man passed away. And I was with him from 13, 20, almost 21, and my whole world, even though the abuse, the addiction, all of it was in there, my whole world, I felt like ended. I didn't know what I was going to do with myself. And so somebody told me about stripping, working in a strip club. And so I was like, okay, I could do that.
Right.
So I started working in a strip club. And that is where I met a madam. And she said, you can make way more money. I can provide you with all the drugs you need. We can do this. And so I was like, okay. And that became very dark, very fast. So I was literally in a hotel. It was like a nine to five job, you know. I was able to go home at night. I was able to do things like that. But I was in this hotel all day long doing whatever I needed to do because she got the money and I would get a pain pill. And so that ended when I went to jail for shoplifting. I became more, I became more trouble for her versus benefit.
Income.
Income. And so I, so after jail, continued to get in trouble. And then I started prostitution on my own, would make money that way. And, again, jail was in the mix. I could not stay sober. Yeah. I couldn't stay out of jail.
Yeah.
The last time I went to jail, so first what happened was I overdosed. I overdosed on heroin. Mm-hmm. And when I came to, I was as white as white could be, and I heard a voice say, "You need help."
Wow.
And I was like, wow. What is this? Like, what is happening? I heard that voice say, "You need help."
Wow.
Looking around me, everybody, including family, was still doing the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody
mm-hmm.
was paying attention to the fact that I overdosed. Yeah. Nobody cared what was happening. A couple days later, I went to probation, and I was going to fail a drug test, so I knew I was going to jail. And I looked at that probation officer, and I remember his face. Do not remember his name, but I remember his face, and I just... He was like, "Ma'am, you're going to jail." And I looked at him and I just said, "Thank you."
Mm.
And he just kind of looked at me like, "What? What?" Nobody ever says thank
yeah,
you.
For sure.
And I said, wow. "If I didn't go to jail today, I was going to die."
Wow.
That I will remember just like yesterday. Like, it is like, okay, I heard that voice. Mm-hmm. Something told me. I know now. I know now it was the Lord, but in that moment, I was like, "What is talking to me?"
Yeah.
So something told me I needed to get some help, and so I did. Not by choice, obviously. I went to jail.
You had some assistance.
You know, I had some help. Yeah, I feel like that was the Lord just pushing me along, saying,
totally.
"I'm going to help you get the help that you need." In jail, I was in jail for four months.
Mm-hmm.
In that process, in the time of being in jail, I was told that I was going to go to prison. I was facing 5 years in prison. And they were like, "We are done with you. You were in and out.
Yeah,
you know, you just can't keep things in order. You're going to go to prison." I remember after I left that court hearing that day, I went back to my jail cell and I hit my knees.
Yeah.
And I said, "Lord, like, this isn't it. Like, what is happening? Like, Lord, this is not it. What am I going to do?
Wow.
Lord, I need you."
Yeah.
And I remember just crying out to him and just saying, "Lord, I need you."
Mm.
And I bargained and I was like, "If you get me out of this, I will do whatever. Mm. I will serve you for the rest of my life." And I remember shortly after... Out of Darkness came to the jail to do a presentation.
Oh, wow.
"This is what we offer."
Yeah.
"This is the criteria." I remember writing my first letter to a volunteer named Tina. She still has my letter to
Good
this
old
day.
Tina.
Yeah, we love her. I wrote a letter to her. She came to visit me in jail. She brought me a Bible.
Wow.
And she did her little assessment to see if I would meet the criteria for the program. And I did.
Wow.
And I was like, "Well, I was told I was going to prison. I don't know what's happening."
Right.
My attorney changed. The judge changed.
Whoa.
That was the Lord.
Wow.
So I got a new attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to him about this program. And they went, Out of Darkness went to court with me.
Wow.
And they mandated me. The judge said, "Okay, we will give you this opportunity.
Yeah.
If you mess up one time, you're going to prison."
Right.
Like, all right,
okay,
here we go. So I, you know, that was still my choice though, which is amazing. I could choose to go to prison. I could choose to go to a program.
Yep.
I went to Out of Darkness. That was the first time that I genuinely felt like the Lord wrap his arms around me.
Oh my goodness.
I felt love. Mm. I felt the unity. I felt the family atmosphere that they created within the home.
Wow.
And it was very unfamiliar, the whole setup.
Mm-hmm.
Never went to a program before, never felt this type of connection, and never genuinely felt the Lord. Mm. So in that time, I was at the safe home for 2 weeks. Met with a case manager, you know, met with a safe home manager at that time. And I remember saying to the old safe home manager, I'm going to come back and work here.
Oh, wow.
And she was like...
And you're there for like 2 weeks. And right. She's like, okay, honey.
And she's like, okay.
Okay. We'll see.
She's like, come back and take my job if you want it. Oh, and I'm like, okay. Think nothing of it, you know. I end up going to a long-term inpatient residential program where we focus on inner healing.
Wow.
Holistic inner healing organization. I was there for 21 months.
Wow,
yeah. I was very stubborn. It's okay, you know. In that time frame of being there, I was facing a CPS case. Mm-hmm. My son was in foster care, mm-hmm. and the judge was going to terminate my rights. Oof. So I went there in December, got there on December the 8th, March 20th. Mm-hmm. The judge was like, done, gonna terminate my rights. I'm like, I'm really trying now at this point. Well, I wasn't trying before. Mm-hmm. I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And then I was sitting next to my attorney and I heard the Lord say so clearly, sign your rights over to your son's aunt and uncle and I will restore your relationship with him.
Whoa.
And I was like, what does that mean? I started bawling. My son's aunt and uncle are sitting behind me. My son was not there. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't in the room at that moment. And I looked up to my attorney. He was sitting to the left of me. And I said, what would this look like? What would it look like for me mm-hmm. to sign my rights over? What's the process? Mm-hmm. Would I have a relationship with my son? And he said, it would give you an opportunity for an open adoption. Mm. And what that meant was whatever our aunt, say my aunt and uncle, and I'll get to all of that in 1 second. So they are the aunt and uncle of my son's dad. Mm-hmm. So they've known me since I was 13. Mm. And he said you could have an open adoption. Whatever they agree to is what you will get. And I'm like, okay. DFACS is out of the picture, mm-hmm. or CPS mm-hmm. is out of the picture. My son will be stable. Yeah. He will get a stable home. He will be in a place of like receiving love and care. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, this is mm-hmm. what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I signed my rights over. In that moment, I felt all of the anger, the shame, right. the guilt, the mm-hmm. just like, what have I done?
Yeah.
But I stood on what the Lord said. I will restore your relationship with your son.
Yeah.
Little did I know, it took me some time for the Lord to show me what that consisted of the blessing that he used. So our aunt and uncle were not able to have children. So not only did the Lord take what the enemy tried to steal, kill, and destroy, the Lord's switched it for his good, mm-hmm. blessed them with a children, mm-hmm. with a son, but then they were healthy for me. They stepped in. They started taking me on passes. They were that healthy family that would support me during mm-hmm. my recovery, during my time. And so there was a bond. Mm-hmm. There was something that was created so beautifully that was like only the Lord. Mm-hmm. And it was beautiful to see mm-hmm. how the Lord can just switch and take something that was so bad and something that to me was the worst thing that I could ever do. Mm-hmm. And he just switched it for something so beautiful. Mm-hmm. So we've built, my son still lives with them. He's mm-hmm. almost 15. My aunt and uncle are amazing. They're huge supporters, like they advocate for me like no one else. they are raising him, taking care of him. But now my son and I have an amazing relationship. Oh, we talk every night. He gets to come to my house on the weekends. Mm-hmm. We get to do family vacations together, just different things.
Absolutely.
But you know, that's where him and I are at now. If we go back a little bit, I graduated my program mm-hmm. and I stayed there and I started working. Mm-hmm. Went after education, got my peer support specialist. Mm-hmm. I Out of Darkness reached out for me to do a recording of my testimony mm-hmm. and just kind of reconnected that mm-hmm. connection with them. And I was like, man, like I don't know. I just kind of really felt pulled
right.
To the safe home. after I got my peer support, I started volunteering, mm-hmm. you know, started spending time there more. Mm-hmm. Then I started working part-time there. Mm-hmm. In the midst of that, I met my husband. Mm-hmm. We got married. We're about to celebrate on July 14th, 5 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. We now have a 2.5-year-old daughter mm-hmm. together. But then, again, if we go back to just like my heart being pulled towards out of darkness, mm-hmm. I was doing that peer support part-time, 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
Started picking up a little more, like, overnight shift.
Sure, I'm sure. They're like, hey.
Just helping out. You yeah. know, they just needed some help.
They just had a little short.
And then I remember meeting with our old director, and I said, I'm supposed to be here full time. Mm. I don't know what this mm-hmm. looks like. I'm just supposed to be here. And she was like, yes, you are. The Lord told us that.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, thanks, Jesus, for just paving the yeah. way. And so, yeah, so I've been with Out of Darkness for almost 5.5 years, I
wow.
believe,
yeah.
including the time of being peer support.
Sure, sure.
And it has been a blessing. You know, I've went back to school, got education, became a certified addiction drug counselor, mm-hmm. so I'm able to use that certification to help the women.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a stepping stone, yep, worked my yep. way through different positions
sure.
In the safe home, now being the manager, yeah. and as hard as it is such a blessing.
Mm.
My husband and I, we have our cute little family, mm. you know, we have our son, he comes, we get time with him, we
yeah.
have our daughter, we are actually leaving next Thursday for a mission trip,
yeah.
so we're so excited to do that,
mm-hmm.
and the Lord has just really taken my life and where I was at almost 9 years ago, I was going to die.
Yeah.
I was going
yeah.
to die. Somebody was going to hurt me. We're in this place of just like, I've hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
And the Lord picked me up. He picked me up. He grabbed my hand and he said, you are my daughter mm-hmm. and I've got you. And I have something so amazing for you. I did not know that my life would be where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very grateful for that. Very grateful for the opportunities that mm-hmm. the Lord has done in my life and just continued growth. But most of all, I'm like really grateful for my relationship
mm-hmm.
with him and the healing, the shame and the trauma that I endured as a child. You know, that's still there. I
yeah.
know that it happened. But it doesn't hold power over me
mm-hmm.
anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I have the freedom to be able to, A, help other people, but to be able to say that that did take place, but it is not who I am.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sorry.
No apologies needed.
So that's my story. It is a redemption story of the Lord,
absolutely.
Ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
It was not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Life is not easy, right?
Yeah.
And when you, just somebody you would say normal, who don't experience trauma or substances, it's not easy for them.
Right.
But then you add on just the abuse and the trauma and the substances and the self-hatred and the shame. And you
absolutely.
Add all that stuff in.
Yeah.
And it's not easy for those things to happen, but it's also not easy to relive them and
yes.
process them.
Mm-hmm.
But I am very much so grateful that I've had the opportunity to process, to heal, to be an overcomer.
Absolutely.
I stand proudly and
yeah.
I say that like, I am an overcomer. I am a survivor. I am a survivor of trauma.
Yeah.
I'm a survivor of substance use.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a survivor of mm-hmm. exploitation.
Yes.
And I'm just a survivor of saying that there is restoration that can take place with the Lord.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you for being so open and
yeah.
sharing your story with us.
Thanks.
I think one takeaway is, you know, we can do this work all day long. And
mm-hmm.
I think so many people are called into this work and we have to be obedient to that. But really at the end of the day, it from your story and so many other women that I've heard, like it is the Lord
mm-hmm.
intercepting their lives in the
yeah.
middle of their pain and then drawing them piece by piece, moment by moment. And maybe that looks like different people step into their journey, but it's really that continuous thread is the Lord mm-hmm. bringing them to a place of healing. So it's such a beautiful testament to how the Lord has intercepted, you know, your life to bring you to where you are today. When you gave him your yes, mm-hmm. he said, okay, right? So thank you so much, Shannon. Absolutely. I'm sure we could talk for hours and hours. We are so grateful to have you on here as a representative of Frontline Response, and also for just the work that you do, the stories that you've shared, and the testimonies that you carry. If people want to find out more about you, where can they go to find you or Frontline?
Yeah, so I have social media, mm-hmm. Facebook. You can look up Frontline Response. Mm-hmm. Our website, I believe it's just www.frontlineresponse.org. Those are probably the best ways to be able to find me.
Awesome.
You know, always email me through Frontline Response.
Absolutely.
You can email me if anybody wants to know more about my story or just more education, or anything that I could offer you guys and your organizations, please feel mm-hmm. free, reach out. I want to be able to share what I can share. Mm-hmm. Now, I know I do not have all of the answers, but I want to be able to help. If we don't have an answer, then let's work together to find that.
Yeah.
It's so important. And you need connections. You
Absolutely.
Need kingdom connections.
Yes.
You need the partners. This work, you need each other.
You really, really
and
do.
And so I am completely open and I'm very grateful. Thank you for having me today.
It was our pleasure. If you want to learn more about their organization, it's frontlineresponse.org. They're incredible leaders, advocates in this industry, and do incredible work. You can also find out more about Elijah Rising, elijahrising.org. You can subscribe, so you can get the latest information and up-to-date podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode. If you were inspired by this content today, please share, rate, and leave a review. Also, please consider making a donation at elijahrising.org/donate. Your support helps us continue the vital mission to combat sex trafficking. Until next time.